G'day folks, and welcome to Happy Days. This is your pal Jesse on the mic, thanking each and every single one of you for taking the time to listen to this little podcast, proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. If you want to support my creative cause, follow me at www.frekproductions.com. There you will find my novels, my comic books, podcasts, and just some of the many crazy, zany, creative things I've been up to over the last 2 years and beyond. So check it out, and I appreciate your support. Now, this week's episode is a good one because we're talking about the fans, okay? I've talked to some interesting people from all walks of life, and I absolutely love, you know, doing this show for that reason, because everyone's got a fascinating story to tell. But I had this crazy idea the other day, and I don't think it's a crazy idea. I think it's a strong idea. The fans. The fans are the people that, you know, we work hard and we live for those moments where we get to go see our favorite movie, we get to see our favorite bands, you know, whatever. You know, we're the fans. We are the passionate ones. We are the voice of... the voice of many that empower the artists or the films to go to the heights that they go to or the depths that they fail to. You know, we have the power as the fans. And I thought this week it'd be really cool to speak to someone that has definitely seen his fair share of great films and has been very outspoken, you know, probably one of the toughest critics I know of certain movies, and, you know, always holds his ground and, always will fight tooth and nail to, you know, to get his point across about, his opinion about films. And I respect that. And the same with music as well, you know, I'm speaking about a guy named Jamie Cook. He lives in Brisbane. He is a guy that loves music. He loves movies. And so much so, you know, he travels far and beyond to go see the music he loves or the movie locations that he loves. What drew me to this conversation was his incredible words of praise for the new Top Gun film, Top Gun Maverick. And, you know, I just thought, wow, this is really something coming from probably one of the toughest critics I know online. But also the fact that, you know, I remember once upon a time he traveled to New York to go meet the cast and crew of The Warriors, even seeing the locations. And, you know, that's a true passionate fan right there. Like, just incredible that you would go as far as traveling to the other side of the world to meet, you know, the people you grew up with. And, you know, he's in this conversation, you'll hear him talk about places that he visited, you know, various locations for music and for movies that were filmed in various parts of New York and around. And, you know, it's honestly, it's a candid conversation between mates about music, about movies. It's about life. It's just about the passion of loving these things that we live for. You know, we work hard. We work, you know, some people work 6 days, 7 days a week, whatever. You know, we work hard and we pay our bills and, you know, put food on the table and everything. But, you know, every now and then we get to indulge and escape. And a great movie or a great album can provide that form of escapism for us. And, you know, for guys like Jamie, he talks about early childhood experiences seeing Kiss in 1980 or seeing Jaws on the big screen in 1976. They're, for me, incredible life moments that, you know, in a modern society that is just unfortunately riddled with ageist opinion, I don't know about you, but I would be absolutely thrilled to the bits to be able to proudly boast that I got to see Jaws on the big screen, or I got to see Kiss at the prime, at the peak of Kiss mania when it hit Australia. I don't know about you, but that's bragging rights right there. And that's incredible, you know. And, you know, he talks about it with just such a humble spirit. And I love it. I respect him for it a lot. And, yeah, I just thought it'd be a great idea just to have a candid conversation, you know, between fans about music and movies. Yeah, that's really, really the basis of this conversation. And we also talk about, you know, venues that have been and gone that are no longer with us. You know, it's a bit of a sore spot for many of us watching beloved venues that have just been such a vital part of our lives crumble away to what they call progress today, I guess. Do we agree with it? Not necessarily, because it's history, you know. It's, for me, I talk about walking into Festival Hall, the Festival Hall Apartments, as they're called now. And every now and then I go there, and it's quite a sad moment for me. I'm very quiet when I walk in there, as I look upon all the photos and the pieces of wood from the stands that line the wall of this monument to the Festival Hall. And I guess for me, you know, amongst seeing these photos of, say, Liberace and Alice Cooper, the Beatles, some of the wrestling and the boxing from back in the days, for me, the saddest part is not seeing a time that once was, but seeing the constant flow of people just walking past, and not even as much as a glance at the wall. I don't know, it's just, maybe it's just the fan in me, but whenever I go to any Hard Rock Cafe in the world, I'm glued to the walls for what feels like hours sometimes. And I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I guess as fans, you know, there's a certain magic. There's this effect that happens to us when, you know, that invokes within us when we're experiencing a movie on a screen, or you know, watching a band, or listening to a great album or a great song. And you'll hear a lot of that in this conversation. It's really just a really wonderful conversation between fans about what we love. And I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I truly enjoyed doing this one. And I'm really grateful to Jamie for taking the time to, yeah, talking about this. This is a really fun chat. So please enjoy this episode of Happy Days. And if you haven't already done so, please hit that subscribe button. Go one step further, hit the notification bell. Shows me that you care. And yeah, let's get on with the show, shall we? Here's Jamie Cook on Happy Days.
Yeah, mate. Good man.
Good.
Finally.
Yes. Oh, the elation. Beautiful, beautiful, man. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your happy days, man. I'm pumped.
No, good to be here, mate.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Bro, I got you on here because I consider you, you know, one thing about music and movies and all that is, you know, quite often in what I do is I talk to the people that do the thing, that are behind the scenes, but very rare do I get the chance to talk to the people that, you know, are the real diehard fans. And I consider you one of those guys that are as passionate as they come, man. Like, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It's a bit of a passion of mine.
Absolutely, man. I've seen some of your exploits, dude, and I'm like, you're that guy. You're right place, right time, man. You've just done some incredible things, and I'd love to talk about those things.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, go for it. I'm a bit of a hard critic with a lot of shit that's out there, mate. But you know,
yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like, that's what I respect about you, man. You're tough as nails. You don't, you know, a lot of people call bullshit on a lot of stuff. That, you know, it's quick and easy for them to go, yeah, everything's cool, everything. But, you know, when it's not, and yeah, you're that guy who goes, yeah, no, this is actually pretty shit. You know?
Yeah.
And I like that. Cool. But yeah, dude, like, I mean, music, movies, you're that guy, man. You love it all, and I don't know, where did it start for you, dude, like with music and movies?
Mate, I suppose we're going back to probably the early 70s, I think, mate. I mean, yeah. I think my first big cinema experience was probably in 1976 when my oldies took me to see Jaws on the big screen, you know. So, you know, scared the shit out of me at the time. Yeah. But, you know, it was just one of those things. And then it sort of went from there, you know. I mean, well, my mum and that, they weren't big into movies at all by any means. And they're, you know, still not to this day. But that movie was the thing that probably pretty much cemented my love for it. But having, you know, going on to the movie side of, the music side of things, I guess the same thing, you know. My mum was a Beatles fan. She saw the Beatles. And from there, I sort of, you know, listened to a lot of that shit when I was a kid. And then, you know, it branched off into Kiss. And then, you know, my oldies took me to see Kiss in 1980.
Oh, man, that would have been so
cool. And
then
it pretty much grew from there, man, you know. So the hard rock, you know, the hair metal, and then onwards and upwards.
Yeah, that's one of the amazing things, man. It's what a time, you know. I always quite often say, what a time to be alive. But in your case, it's like, you know, I think it's freaking awesome the fact that you got to experience Jaws at that time in, you know, on the big screen. You know, a few people can kind of boast that kind of stuff, and I think it's fucking awesome, man. Like, that is so
man.
Cool.
And you know, the thing is with that movie, man, it's you know, I don't give a shit what anyone says. I mean, you know, it might have been, you know, 45, 46 years ago, whatever it was, you know, but it still holds up today. That shark still looks better than, you know, some of the CGI crap we see on the big screen now, you know, and the technology that we got now, and they still can't get it right. But yet, you know, Spielberg nailed it all those years ago.
Didn't he just, man? I mean, that movie, like, you know, when you read the backstory behind it, you know, what they initially employed for that film with the shark and everything, and they ended up just going, hey, let's shoot it from a POV perspective. That was like the best move ever.
Yeah, totally, man. And I, you know, to be fair as well, I mean, I'm a big fan of the sequel as well. I mean, I know it gets a lot of hate with a lot of fans, but man, I tell you what, you know, I think that's as not as good, but it's up there with it. I'll take that to my grave, fighting to say absolutely. That I love it.
Yeah,
so
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sequel holds steady, man. It's like you say, I mean, it's hard to top the original, right? Like,
oh, totally.
It's a huge challenge for any film like that. You know, I mean, shit, the list goes long on that genre of things. Empire Strikes Back, you know, holds a pretty close candle to Star Wars, I guess. And
I mean, to me, those ones even still hold up today compared to even some of the later ones, the later Star Wars trilogy, you know? When you look at some of the special effects from, I guess, the other Lucas ones from 1999 onwards, I mean, some of those specs were pretty clunky compared to the first ones.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, that's the thing. Like, and just a lot of the simple effects that the simple practical effects they used, and you know, when you look at some of the you know, behind the scenes photos, it just blows your mind what they did in comparison to what they do today.
Totally agree with you, man.
Give me those days any day, man. I love that stuff, dude.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, mate. I mean, you know, look, I mean, I talk about with, you know, a really good mate of mine, Rob, you know, we talk all the time, and we only talked about it a few days ago, and you know, going on the movies, I mean, you know, we throw these things out all the time. I mean, you tell me the last time where there was an iconic film score. I bet you can. I know what it is. I mean, in my opinion, but I'd debate anybody else to tell me otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, how many times can you walk somewhere and, you know, they play the Superman theme from 1978, or they play,
that's,
you know,
the thing. Yeah.
You know, the Indiana Jones or the Jaws theme or Star Wars theme, anything like that. I mean, the last one I can actually think of that actually stands out is Jurassic Park. And, you know, we're going back nearly 30 years for that.
Yeah, I'd be safe to agree with Jurassic Park. Because, I mean, anything else, it's really hard to sort of, I don't know, really think about that without going back as far as, you know, your Supermans, Indiana Jones, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And then getting onto the horror side of things with Halloween. And,
Friday the 13th, if you know. Not that that's really a score, but you know.
Not really, no. But
you know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
But I'm even a fan of, like, some of the 90s scores. Like, I can't think of the names off the top of my head, but, you know, the Hellraiser score. You know, a lot of the Clive Barker stuff he did with Nightbreed and that, and even Keeney Man, a lot of those awesome.
I'm going back to the 80s. I think one of the my favorite film scores, and I, funny enough, only just picked it up again on vinyl recently.
Is
the original Firestarter by Tangerine Dream. I look at those sorts of scores and think, well, you know, they're pretty much almost a star of the movie, more so than the actual people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
sorry to interrupt there. Are you?
No, you're right, man.
Are you a fan of, like, say, for example, like, I haven't even seen the remake. I'm sort of a bit skeptical, but are you a fan of things like remakes with, say, Firestarter? You know,
I have seen it. Look, I didn't hate it, but I wouldn't watch it again if that's what you want to know.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I probably guess that's a indication of, you know, what I really thought about it. But I didn't hate it, but remakes, not a fan as such. But having said that, I will probably contradict myself and say things like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003 and even the one after that from 2006, I thought they were fantastic because they threw their own take on it. And, you know, and I'll probably get cop shit for this, but I think the zombie Halloween movie, and I thought that was fantastic.
Dude, I think the zombie Halloween movie rules.
Yeah, I kind of think it's the movie side of, you know, it's probably the movie version of Nickelback, you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I can't see what the hate is with Nickelback. I'm not going to say that I'm the biggest fan of Nickelback, but, but Zombie put his own take on it, man. It wasn't, you know, he made it more violent. He gave it a backstory and that's all by me, you know. I wasn't much of a fan of the sequel, but, you know.
Look, man, I think the sequel was a victim of circumstance, you know, and when you read into the behind the scenes of the sequel, Zombie was under a lot of studio pressure from the Weinsteins to make a bag of shit that he didn't want to make. So he just basically gave him a version with a middle finger attached to it.
And, that's true.
And sadly for the fans that pay the money to, you know, watch these films, we got treated to, you know, a watered down version of what we should have got. And it sucks when that happens.
Yeah. But you know, in relation to other remakes, I thought Hills Have Eyes was good.
That was great, yeah.
Great films. And you know, I'll even say the I Spit on Your Grave ones were pretty good as well, you know, as much as they were pretty hard to watch in some of those rape scenes. But
I haven't watched that yet.
The sequel, man, the actual second one of the remake is probably a lot harder than the first. They're pretty nasty.
Yeah.
I thought they were good.
That's interesting, man. That's I mean, the art of the remakes is a tough one, man. Like, I sincerely hope they never touch a movie like The Thing. As much as that is technically a remake, it's kind of a reinterpretation. And I hope that, no studio. I know we got given a prequel, and I'm kind of okay with that to a degree. But, I hope they don't try to, you know, do an outright remake of something like that. It's just...
I think they probably will at some point, mate, whether, you know...
It's, but you just can't beat perfection.
No, that's true. And, I mean, I look at things like even going back to talking another like The Fly. I mean, none of that was CGI, man. It was all actual, you know, built special effects, you know. It was no computer-generated graphics, which I thought was great.
Absolutely.
And those two films, The Thing and The Fly, still hold up to this day. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, 100%. Like... Those movies with the practical effects, like, they are the stuff of legends. It's like, I've read things about, you know, where people talk about memory and movies today. Example, I'll throw an example out there. Doctor Strange, the latest one, right?
Yep.
It was all right. But I couldn't tell you what the scenes with the CGI effects of this and that and the other. I couldn't tell you. But,
I wasn't a big fan of it, mate. I mean, I did like a couple of the nods to Evil Dead that Raimi threw in.
Yeah, I loved all that.
You know, I thought the Marvel Studios, I found when they first started off in that first phase, I thought they really tried with a lot of those films, which were fairly solid. And I thought they pretty much the wheels fell off the cart, I reckon, around the Black Panther time. And it was just, they were churning them out for shit's sake, you know. It's like, here's another one. And it's to me, it's worn out its welcome. I'm absolutely sick to death of comic book character films. And
a lot of us fans, we watch these things just purely because we just want to see, you know, our favorite heroes or villains up on the big screen. And we go, oh, cool, there's Moon Knight. All right. Oh, well, they fucked that up. Anyway, next.
Yeah, on the next one, you know, yeah. And that's the way it is. And that's what I feel like every week going to the cinema, man. I mean, I try and do every week if I can to see something, but, you know, it's pretty rare I come out going, man, that was great film, you know.
I think it's great that people like yourself go to the cinemas and support the cinemas like that, man. It's such a, you know, some say it's a dying thing, and I don't agree. It is and it isn't, you know. But,
I don't know, man. It's going to be hard to say what's going to happen in another, you know, like in another 5 years or whatever, you know, like if these streaming services, you know, it's like some of these movie companies are making things for Netflix and that now, and, like Stan and Amazon. And I mean, I'd hate to see the death of cinema, but it's hard to say.
I've had this chat with a few people over few episodes, like I talk about a lot on the Rad podcast. We talk about the love, you know, a constant love letter to Blockbuster Video, Video Easy Days. You know, we just talk about that
thrill
you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Video store, you'd look on the shelves and you just go, you are just drawn. Like, say for example, you see Nightmare on Elm Street OG on the shelf, you're gravitating towards it. Like, you don't know what it's about. You just see the art and you go, oh, I have to see this. Yeah. You don't get that today with streaming. You just kind of
I totally agree. But having said that, man, now you mentioned shit like that. I mean, I know it's nothing I'll ever take away the, you know, good old days of walking into, like you said, into a video store and you know, spending a good hour or whatever they're trying to pick what you want.
Man,
you know, like, I mean, I don't know, have you ever downloaded Tubi? You know, the streaming app, the free one. Look at some of that stuff, mate. You know, like some of the B-grade horror, and that's fantastic, you know. And it's stuff that you can't – some of it you can't buy. Some of it's you probably can overseas, but we unfortunately don't get a lot of the shit in Australia, America and the rest of the world gets. But, yeah, I mean, that takes me back to, you know, high school days, man, when you're getting all this trash out to watch on a Friday or Saturday night.
Actually, so. I found the gem, The Stepfather. That's a classic, dude. You see, you find some gems on some of these streaming services, and moments of grandeur, but nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I noticed Tubi, you now got the three Porky's movies up there for really? Viewing.
That's crazy. Yeah. You know, like with cinema experiences, you know, part of the spark for this conversation is, you know, just that. In the last week, I've just seen so much amazing love for the new Top Gun movie. Oh, and you're one of the toughest critics I know. Like, I know for a fact. To see you say what you said about that, that's huge, man. And
Look, I mean, you watch a movie, man, and you know just from the first couple of minutes that you're going to be in for a bit of a treat. And that's the way I kind of felt with it. I was worried to start with. You know, and I thought 36 years later, I don't know, but man, it gave the original a hell of a run for its money. It might have even beat it, I think, you know. But I'm hoping, like I said, when I said to you a couple of days ago, I'm really hoping to go and see it in 4DX this weekend if I can.
Same here, man. Same here. I have absolute dreams that I can set.
Yeah, and you know. You know, again, a movie with little or no CGI, you know, it was just a breath of fresh air.
I think that first 10 minutes after, you know, without getting heavy in the spoilers, but after the aircraft carrier sequence opening, the test pilot sequence, I think that was, you know, quite a substantial amount of CGI. But other than that, watching Tom Cruise getting sucked back into the seat at maximum G-force.
And I know Cruise gets a lot of hate, and I know a lot of it's probably deserved as well, deservedly so. But it's pretty hard pressed to find a shit film in his catalogue, dude. I mean, there's a few. There is a few, but love him or hate him, mate. You know, he chooses well, and he's got a fairly good career behind him.
And you know, to on top of that, saying the guy does a lot of his own stunts.
Yeah.
How many guys can brag that? Like,
yeah,
put their bodies on the line the way he does, man.
But I thought it was really clever with a lot of the Easter eggs and that they threw in there as well. Yeah, you know, like, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you picked it up when he first walked into the bar with Jennifer Connelly, and on the jukebox they were playing Bowie. You know, so it was a throwback to Labyrinth. You know, which I thought was
Yeah, okay, I got that. Awesome. There's some incredible moments in that film, man. And that was definitely that was a good one. That's well picked.
Yeah, so I just thought of a few little things like that, and you know, I'd luckily only watched the original a night before I saw it. So
yeah.
if I hadn't, I would have kind of wondered who she was, Jennifer Connelly's character. But
yeah,
it mentions in the first one that she was the admiral's daughter.
Thank you for answering that question for me, because I was talking about this with a mate the other day, and I said, you know, I think she's the admiral's daughter that was referenced in the first film.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
Awesome.
So, mate, I just thought it was a, you know, the only thing I'll knock about it, mate, was probably the soundtrack to a point. I mean, it had nothing on the original soundtrack, and I don't think, you know, in another 36 years, I don't think they're going to be looking back at a Lady Gaga song, and you know, compared to Berlin's or Kenny Loggins' tunes or anything like that, or Cheap Trick, you know.
Yeah. Look, I'm grateful that they gave the nods to the original score and included Danger Zone in there, but yeah, that, you know, Lady Gaga, so whatever. But I mean, I just listened to that song at the end and just kind of went, yeah, I don't know about this.
Yeah, no, that's one thing it didn't have was the soundtrack. But
I mean, I don't care if it's Berlin 36 years later. Give us a reprise of that
song. Yeah, totally agree, mate. I mean, they could have just replayed that Take My Breath Away during the love scenes and all that kind of shit. Yeah, you know? But mate, yeah, look, otherwise, I couldn't fault that film at all. I mean, the last part of it was a bit of a throwback to Star Wars, you know, in the original.
Wasn't it just?
Yeah, so.
I'm so glad you're not the only one that felt that, dude, because I was loving that. I was on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. So I'll let it slide with that one, mate. I mean, it entertained me for 130 minutes, and I got nothing bad to say about it. So, you know, and it's rare that I can walk out of a cinema and say that about a film these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's very few sequels that can have that kind of impact that movie did. And I think that's probably one of the best sequels that's come out in a long time.
I think it
took like a long time to happen.
It did, man. And you know, the only other one I'll really give the thumbs up to is the last Ghostbusters film, The Afterlife, which I thought they nailed it. They nailed that too.
Out of that.
You know, great wrap up, mate. I they'll probably do more, of course, but I just think it's pretty hard to top that one too. I don't know if they'll beat that again.
You know, I was throwing a funny idea out there about Top Gun after I saw it with my friend, and he's going, dude, that's a brilliant idea, and you know, people will probably, you know, be careful that idea will float somewhere. I'm like, I hope it does. I thought, well, what if there was a third Top Gun movie but a prequel? Because you know, in the first film, when Tom Skerritt's talking to Tom about, you know, to Maverick about his dad flying with his dad in the Korean War, it's like, well, how cool would that be? A throwback to the '60s and give us a '60s soundtrack. You know, have some F4 Phantoms just all guns blazing.
I could probably see him doing that with all these offshoots and that they do a lot of these movies these days. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I mean, what they say, it's the biggest biggest opening box office hit in ages or something, or the biggest one of Tom Cruise's career. And so, that's, to me, is going to, you know, cha-ching.
I think they'll be.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So, if they do, I hope they nail it again and, don't destroy the legacy.
Yeah, that's it, man. Fingers crossed, man. I love it. I promise we'll get into the music stuff too, man. But
you're right.
Because you got some cool stories about that. But the one that I'm most intrigued with as well is you are an absolute outright fan of The Warriors, and you know,
best movie of all time, man.
Yeah, amen to that, dude. It's like, I cringe when people tell me they haven't seen it. I'm like, no, please just watch this film, please. But you went one step further. Your passion in that film took you to the 40th anniversary of that film.
It was a little bit before that, mate. That was 2016. Yeah, it took me all the way to Coney Island.
I mean, what an incredible rite of passage for you, man. Like,
yeah, it was, man. It was, you know, it was a bit of a journey to plan it all. And the more it sort of went on, the more not from my side of things, but the promoter side of things, which I won't name, but it, sure. it turned at the end of it all, it turned into an absolute right shit show, not for me, but for everybody involved in it, on their side of the fence. But, it was kind of like a big con job the whole way, you know, but, but, you know, I mean, I, having said that, I got to meet, you know, a lot of the cast, you know, I got, I met five out of the nine. So,
cool.
It was an easy day, man. You know, there were 3 days, but I only went to 1 day because it was just, it was just an absolute shit show the first day and that. And I could just see, this is not going to end well. And it didn't. So, and it left the cast with a bad taste in their mouth. It left, they had a couple of bands playing there, like Cro-Mags played one of the nights. Murphy's Law played one of the nights. And Tom Waits, who plays Fox in the film, his band played there. Yeah. One night as well, and none of those bands got paid. It just went from bad to worse, mate. So without going right into the nitty gritty, but we'll leave that for another day. But look, it worked out for me. I never had a problem with anything there. It's I got what I needed to get done, signed, all that kind of shit. And I got to see a lot of the Warriors movie locations while I was over there as well. So, which I'd been in New York before to see some of that as well. And I added a few, you know, to my resume.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, along with a few other things as well over there, with other movie locations, which I'm big on as well, like Taxi Driver, and you know.
Yeah, so, I remember seeing some of the Warriors photos.
The Warriors is, yeah, that's where it's all at for me, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that movie, like, far out. I mean, I hope one day that they put it back on the big screen, because I would love to see it on the big screen personally. But
they did it a couple of years ago at Hoyts in the Meyer Center.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I sadly missed that one. But I hope they do it again. You know, for another anniversary. I recently spoke to Thomas Waits about it, and
okay.
Yeah, we did a Happy Days episode 5 episodes ago or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, lovely guy, man. Lovely guy. And very, very passionate individual. And yeah, we talked about the Warriors amongst other things. But you know, when he asked about, you know, I asked him about when he requested to get his name removed from the credits, and I went, you know, that's a real, you know. I don't know, man. That takes strength of character to do something like that, granted the situation. But I said, do you think at the right circumstances, in the right time, they would add his name back to the credits should opportunity present itself, you know? And
good question.
Yeah. He said pretty much the same thing too. And he's optimistic that it'll happen, but he feels that it won't happen. But I don't know, man. I think if enough fans get behind it, it would be great to see Fox's name back on the credits.
Yeah, it will, man. I mean, and funnily enough, they've only just released it again on Blu-ray. I don't know if you ever saw that new pack that just came out with the director's cut as well as the theatrical cut, which is awesome to
I'm already awesome salivating to see. At the bits for it. So
Yeah. I picked it up on the weekend. So I'd advise if whoever doesn't have it would probably be best to grab it straight away, because I believe it might be on its last legs. You know, for sale. I think it's selling that well. Wow. And I think they've only got about 2,000 made, I think.
Yeah. It's the same with the trade back of the comic book. That's so hard to get, man. Like, I don't know if you're a comic book guy.
No, I did. Not really, but it's something that I guess I snoozed and lost on that one. And I mean, I've still got to get your stuff as well, you know, but I'm a bit of a sleeper on these things and forget about it. But yeah.
It's all good, man. Look, I got the first issue of the Warriors comic book, and I snoozed after that, and I'm regretting my life choices after that. So, I've tried to get it since, and it's one of the hard comics to track down without paying an arm and a leg for
it. But, I think did they have four? Comics in that?
I believe it was about four. Yeah, but
And I missed out on the other one as well, the one that they did the book, the Jailbreak or whatever. Which was, wasn't very well publicized, and it was quite expensive when it came out to get it here. But again, I didn't do that. So maybe I'm not a fan after all.
Oh no, you're a fan. You're a fan. Don't worry, you're a fan. But what was, I mean, getting back to going overseas to America. Like, what was it like for you going, walking those planks of Coney Island, like seeing the Wonder Wheel up close? And, you know, besides meeting the actors, I mean, that aside, but just walking down those locations and just taking your mind back to a time that you saw the movie and just visualizing these moments.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty amazing though. Cause when the train stops, at Coney Island, which is, Stillwell Station, you know, you get out and you immediately see the Wonder Wheel. So that kind of looks the same as when they reach Coney at the end with, you know, when he's with Mercy and, you can see it. So that looks the same, but when you actually get out of the station down, it doesn't look anything like that. Like basically where they had the Warriors Fest, where I went to, which was, you know, that pretty much nobody attended, was right down near where, was actually next to Nathan's, quite near Nathan's hot dog stand, big restaurant there. But it was down near where Luther did the, with the bottle, hitting the bottles, you know, Warriors come out and play. So unless you do your research and where that was filmed, it doesn't look anything like that now. So, which is a shame. But
yeah, they've redeveloped a lot of that.
Yeah, they have, man. They have. So on the boardwalk and that, it was great to walk down. You know, the beach and everything. Of course, that's still the same. But yeah, you know, the rest of the stuff, what you do see in the movies, is not there. There's a lot of stuff is obviously been developed and has changed. But yeah, once you head down towards that boardwalk, that's pretty much where the famous Warriors Come Out and Play scene was filmed.
One of the best improvised moments in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, I did a lot of locations there, man. I did the park, Riverside Park, where they did the big meeting at the start. And you know, you can walk a few more blocks, and that's where you get the what they call the Fireman's Monument, where they were chased down there, and straight across from that is the street where the Furies chased them down. And so they ran across the Fireman's Monument and then down the stairs. So the stairs are straight across the road. You can do that, and then you can follow the Furies' path where they chase them through the through Riverside Park. And if you go a bit further up there, you got the stairs where the famous Charles Bronson stood on the Death Wish stairs for the poster, the original movie poster.
No way.
That's right near there as well. So, but there's a lot of things, man, around the Warriors. You know, there was one of the funniest stories I think we had was, it was sort of down towards the lower east side of Manhattan, and it was around where the candy store was. You know, where he made the phone call and everything.
Yeah, where he makes the phone call and screams.
At that time it was a restaurant, and you know, you've been in New York, haven't you? I think
very briefly.
Well, you see it in the movies, but you know the old basements, how the doors open on the footway, on the footpaths, where they go. Well, this guy, we're getting photos taken outside this place. So this guy comes out of the basement, and he's looking at us, and he's got this look, and he's like, guys, why are you posing in front, you know, like in front of my shop? and I said to him, like, You don't know. And he said, you know what this movie is? I said, the Warriors was filmed there. And he said, I beg your pardon? And I said, the Warriors, man. I said, this is where the candy store scene was at the start of the film. He said, you mean the gang movie, The Warriors?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah. And he had no idea. He was the owner of this store. And so because I'd made his day with that news, he didn't invite us to go back and have a free meal that night. But I didn't take him up on it. I just said to him, look, I'm happy to help you,
mate. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's just amazing what a lot of people don't know, you know, that actually live in the city, what was filmed there, you know, whether you're a movie buff or not, you know. It's and it kind of looks the same in a way. You can still picture you can still see the you know, the way the shops was located and where it was. And so yeah, dude, it's you know, a lot of locations around there with the thing, you know. We even they wouldn't let us in there, but it was the car park where the Gramercy Riffs had their meeting.
So
they have attendance there, so you ask to go up and get a photo and they wouldn't let you in there, so they probably thought, you know, probably have a lot of break-ins and car stealing and all that, so I probably understand that.
Have you seen their book, Can You Dig It, The Phenomenon of the Warriors, by Sean
I've seen it online, man. Yeah, I haven't actually got a copy as yet.
Get a copy, man. It is such a good read.
Yeah, it's usually the postage that kills me, man. That's the thing, you know.
You can get it from Booktopia.
Really?
Yes, you can get it from Booktopia. I got it, no hassles, and I didn't pay him an arm and a leg for it.
Okay, okay, yeah, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Because I think Sean's from, I think he's UK, isn't he?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah, I don't actually know the guy, yeah, though, but I have seen his name floating around different Warriors, yeah, pages on your, on, yep, Facebook.
Very well researched book. I just thought I'd add that because I mean, the, you know, just listening to you talk about, you know, the level of detail that you as a fan you go for, and you know, finding these locations and that, like, I'm getting that same vibe from, you know, reading this book, which is such a good read.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually just looking at it now online. Yeah. Looking at around about $40-45 for a paperback. So
money well spent.
I'll get onto that too. 304 pages sounds pretty decent to me.
And photos and all. Yep. Good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool. Yep. No, I didn't even think about what your Booktopia, but no, there you go. You've sold me, mate.
You're welcome, mate. You're welcome. Yeah. But yeah, dude. So yeah, New York, incredible place, and no doubt. I mean, you went to play iconic locations like CBGBs, and I believe you even saw, was it Physical Graffiti, Led Zeppelin?
Yeah, I did that. I did. I'd actually been to CBGBs back in the day as well, when it actually was CBGBs, you know. So, yeah, been there twice back in early 2000s. So, yeah, it's just amazing club, mate. It's just so small, but the things that went on there, you know, it's to stand there. But yeah, yeah, did the Physical Graffiti, did a few, like I said, taxi driver scenes.
Yep.
And I always say to people, you know, if they go to New York, unless you're into those tourist attractions, which is cool, yeah, do them. But the way you're going to see it, man's on foot, you know.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And I had a lot of late nights planning it, you know, and I dragged my daughter from pillar to post, you know, as much whether she liked it or not, but
she would have loved that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it was good, you know. So I broke when I did the itinerary of what I wanted to see there with the Warriors and everything. Obviously, it's filmed all around New York, and I broke the city, or Manhattan, I like it, into three: uptown, downtown, and midtown. You know, and I spent a lot of late nights planning everything. So every time I'd think of something else, I'd go back and see where it was compared to the last location, and then I had to re-juggle where I was going, and you know, so everything was pretty much timed. On how long it was going to take to get to each location, you know, factoring in, of course, food breaks and drink breaks,
yep,
or everything like that. But yeah, yeah, it's so we just walked it, man, and it was you just got to see a lot of other shit along the way as well. So
yeah,
met a lot of different people, you know. I mean, New Yorkers are a unique bunch of people. So
they really are, man.
Yeah, yeah. So I love the city, man. I think it's awesome.
When they say greatest city on earth, man, they're not wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, you talked to a lot of the back in the, you know, when it was obviously the bit of a war zone over there, a bit of a battle zone. A lot of people miss those days, but it's pretty hard to be, you know, when you look in the Lower East Side around CBGBs, where there's a good chance of getting mugged, raped, or killed, or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and now it's, you know, it's a very hipster area where you know you could never afford to buy in there whatsoever. So,
it's pretty wild, man.
But yeah, we went to there's a place, if you're ever there again, man, I don't know if you remember a show that was on, I think it was on Foxtel, called Oddities.
Okay.
It had people like Jonathan Davis and Brent from Mastodon went into this store, and it was, they basically find all this weird shit, you know, things like they've got autopsy instruments and stuff, two-headed cows and all this sort of stuff in this store. But they had this program on Foxtel where, you know, they had these guests that go in there and say, I want this out of their world sort of thing. And they'd try and source the weirdest thing that they could find and, you know, sell it to them. But the lady that was working there at the time told us a bit about the Warriors as well, you know, it was filmed around there.
No way.
So she said the street that we walked down, which was actually the street where the last scene of, or the climax of Taxi Driver was filmed, where De Niro went apeshit and shot everyone.
Yeah.
She said, you know, back probably late 90s, early 2000s, you would never get down that street alive, you know, unless you were a drug dealer or, you know, you were going to kill someone. You didn't go down that way. She lived around the area and she said she had to go the long way home. That's what it was like. And that's how bad it was. So it's quite interesting when you talk to people and you find out about all that shit that's changed, and it changed pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, so, you definitely get those vibes, man, especially, like, I mean, idiots like me walking around LA at 2 o'clock in the morning for no apparent reason that I couldn't sleep. I just went, I'm going for a walk. And yeah, you see a lot of weird shit at those weird hours. Yeah. And yeah,
totally agree with you, man. But it's, you know, it's an experience. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, I often look to see what the bad areas is and what the good areas are. And when I'm over there, I usually double and triple check that I'm walking in the right direction. And
100%.
And I'm going to come back alive. So it's, yeah, but look, I mean, you know, it's any like anywhere, really. If you want to look for trouble, you'll find it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, so, who was your favorite in the Warriors, man? Were you a Warriors fan first and foremost, or were you a fan of the Gramercy Riffs or Baseball Furies?
God, as a kid, I loved the Furies, man. I saw the film when I was about 10, you know, so it stuck with me from there. But I mean, yeah, like, you know, to a kid, I'd say probably the Furies. But as the older I get, I mean, I dig the Warriors, man. I like the Warriors, and you know, the Riffs are pretty cool as well. So, you know, I would have liked to seen a bit more of some of the other gangs, but obviously, you know, there's only so much time a movie can fit.
Yeah, that's it, man. It's quite a fascinating film how they put it all together, that's for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I guarantee Walter Hill never thought it was going to be the leave the mark on people that did all those years later. So but yeah, mate, it's something that, you know, I haven't watched it for a little while, so yeah, you might spark me up on this one.
It's nothing but love here, man, because I'm happy whenever someone says to me, oh yeah, I'm watching the Warriors at the moment. Yeah, good, because it's freaking amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it holds, like you said before, you know, movies like that, even though there are elements of it that will appear dated in obvious facets, it holds its own compared to
a lot of movies. It does, man. I mean, and for the dated stuff, all I'm going to say with that is probably just some of the clothing and some of the hairstyles.
Yeah,
But everything else, man, I mean, it's you know, it could be set in any year, really.
I mean, that soundtrack was brilliant.
Oh, mate, look, you know, that's probably that opening music, that opening segment of that movie. I think it's an absolutely incredible thing. But, you know, and the funny thing, speaking of Warriors characters, now, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a board game that's out now.
I want that so bad.
Yeah, I found it the other day. No, I haven't got it, but I was looking at it the other day, and they've got every Warriors character. They don't have Ajax in them.
Are you serious?
So I'm not sure why. A lot of people in some of the reviews I read thinks maybe because he used the faggot word in a number of times through the film. Maybe it was, you know.
Yeah, but it was a different time back then, man. Like,
yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. And, you know, I still, you know, to this day, I mean, yeah, look, I mean, I can understand how it offends people, but like I said, it's you know, it's a movie, you know, come on,
it's just a movie. It's roll with
it, man. You know, it's entertainment. Exactly. If you don't want to hear it, don't watch it. So that's what I say.
It's like when you watch a horror movie. If you're not into the gore scenes, you block your eyes.
You don't go and see it. It's quite as simple as that. And
yeah,
you know, and I look at things like, you know, people. I don't know if that's the reason why he's not in it, but there was a few reviews that I'd read thinking that's maybe why they dropped the character. But yeah, like you said, it was it's a time. That's what happened. That was the language people used at that time. It's kind of like Gone with the Wind when people got up in arms about slavery. I mean, that was the time. It's a movie. You know, people need to learn from all that shit and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, that's it. 100%, man. Couldn't have said it better myself, man. It's so true. And like Ajax is like the beauty of the movie, you know, without harping too long about the Warriors. I mean, the beauty of guys like Ajax is, James Remar made that character his own. He took that character and just shaped it. You know?
Absolutely. And I mean, he was a loose cannon from the word go. So, you know, I dig him as a character as much as an asshole he was. I mean, you know,
well, I mean, you know, when you listen to guys like Thomas Waits, man, he, you know, he's, and it's, you know, it's quite documented in the book as well. You know, he speaks with a lot of regret at the time, but he also says, at that time, you know, you're in your early 20s, it's the 70s.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of substances around, and, you know, and there is time to kill and things happen, you know, and yeah, it's just, it just, It is what it is.
Yeah, it's a shame. I really, you know, I don't know why, mate. I mean, there's, you know, it's a real shame that some of those actors, apart from Raymar, didn't go on to bigger and better things. You know, I thought Beck was great. I still think Beck's great. You know, I mean, he did a couple of things like Xanadu, and he did an appearance in, I think, Murder, She Wrote and things like that. But, I mean, Tom Waits, he did some good stuff as well. I mean, he was in The Thing. David Harris was in some okay things as well. But, I mean, those guys, I mean, I don't know why they didn't, you know, crack it bigger than what they did, you know. They were all great actors.
Well, I mean, Jerry Hewitt, that played the lead baseball theory, I mean, he ended up being a, you know, stunt coordinator for, I can't remember. I'm having a brain fart of the cop show now, but that NYPD.
Is it NYPD Blue?
That's what I think so, or, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I can't think.
Law and Order.
Okay.
One of those shows. He was stunt coordinator for like 12 years on that show.
Yeah, you know? Well, one of the Furies was also Steve James, who was he was on a lot of 80s action flicks. Was Michael Dudikoff, like American Ninja, things like that. He died back in '93 with he had cancer, I think. But yeah, he's, you know, you would know him if you saw him. He was in a lot of those sort of Canon made films, you know, Canon group. He was in a lot of those. So good guy. So
I'm with you, but it's unfortunate a lot of these guys, you know, didn't get to, you know, go on to the bigger and better things. And, you know, like James Remar, he's had a wonderful career. And
he has. Indeed, he has, mate.
And thankfully for them, you know, they've got the wonder of the convention circuit these days in America. And David Harris, who played Cochise, has been here for Supernova, which was
cool. I actually saw the movie with him, and when they screened it here in Brisbane.
So cool.
Yeah, that was in 2008, and it's pretty sad that Tom McKitterick, you know, the guy who played Cowboy, he doesn't want a bar of anything anymore. So which I find really weird. I think he lives in the UK, from what I know. But he won't have a part of anything to do with it. I'm not sure why. I mean, there probably is a reason why. I don't know. But which goes back to the Warriors Fest that I went to. He was advertised as, you know, making his first appearance ever, and what everybody knew it was bullshit. So and he didn't turn up. So it was, it was just a, it is, man. You know, and I think, you know, Terry Mikos, who did Vermin, and he's, I think he works for, he's on my Facebook list. He doesn't. Yeah. He's pretty quiet though, but I think he's got something to do with politics. Okay. I think he's
yes, he is. He's I can't remember what sort of politician he is, but he is in politics these days.
He works for a senator or a governor or something along those lines. Yeah. So he was at the fest, and really lovely guy too. It's a shame that we lost a few of them along the way as well.
It's the unfortunate thing of life, but you know, it's great that there are people out there invested, you know, like it. Yourself, myself, and the, you know, the cult following that's out there, we're, you know, pushing for, you know, these guys to make appearances, and
I'd really, you know, I mean, it's not for me to say, but I mean, I'd love to see some of these Supernovas here, or some of the Oz Comic Cons or whatever, you know, take a chance and bring some of these guys out, rather than the same, you know, you've got the same people like every second one. And
I know,
it's always from these shitty TV shows. And I mean, I know people love it, you know, but come on, man, you know, like, I mean, I remember a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, they didn't do Brisbane or Gold Coast or anything like that, but they brought out Danielle Harris, you know, from obviously Halloween movies and that. And I think she did Sydney and Perth. But yeah, things like that. Like, you know, they brought some of the horror icons out, which I did. I know they did Robert Englund a few years back as well. Actually, that was the same year that I was, you know, the same time I was actually at the Warriors Fest. They were here.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Supernova would definitely, I think, would be great for the Warriors to come back. And, you know, I know after speaking to Thomas Waits and even David Harris, I know that they are very, very interested in, you know, coming back to Australia coming to Australia, period, and appearing at Supernova. So, I think, you know, while the fans make the noise, you know, hopefully that'll generate the interest to see this happen. But that's what it's all about. It's the fans, you know. That's, you know, it's why we're having this conversation. It's like, you know,
The passion of the fans. Like, I mean, I don't know how you get get in the promoter's ears or whatever to try, hey, you know, maybe you should try one of these guys or something. But
it's already happening. It's already happening, man. So don't worry. But,
you know, I mean, the UK have had, you know, they've had a couple of Warriors Fest over there. I know it's probably not going to be what it's what it was in Australia. You know, what is it? Excuse me. It's probably not going to be like in Australia what it's like over there. But I still think, you know, even they brought out one or two of the guys, I think it'd be a bit of a kick for a lot of fans.
I think even if you had a couple of the guys, like, say, for example, Thomas Waits and David Harris, what an awesome, you know, the back and forth between those guys at a panel would be awesome. Because, I mean, David Harris held his own on his seminar, but to have another, you know, fellow warrior there alongside of him talking about the glory days would be just freaking awesome.
Yeah, well, the one who does get a lot of the fests with him as well is Apache Ramos. Who played one of the orphans, who does the probably one of the famous lines of the movie is, you know, we're going to rain on you warriors, you know? He's all the fests, you know, and he's probably one of the nicest guys you've ever met in your life. I mean, I was talking to him a bit before I went over there. He remembered me when I went over there.
That's so cool.
He's awesome, mate, you know, and the really good thing was, I mean, a lot of those guys don't set their prices for what they charge, you know. It's and he did one recently. I'm talking within the last month. I think it might have been in Texas or whatever, but somebody had around 50 vests for him to sign of the Warriors, and he was and it was $40 US per vest to get signed, $40 per autograph. So
holy.
Yeah, so I think his wallet went away a bit fatter that weekend.
Absolutely, mate. That's crazy, man. That's crazy.
But yeah, you know.
Yeah, but man, that could talk for ages about the movie side of things and that. But yeah, look, the other thing too is just the music side of things. I mean, yeah, you such a passionate fan of the music as well, and always seeing you at the gigs and that. And you've gone above and beyond as well with music, going to, as you mentioned, CBGBs, and you've been to Dimebag's grave, I believe, as well.
No, yeah. I haven't been. I haven't been to that.
Okay, but you've been to some prominent locations.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah,
you know, I did. You know, the Lemmy statue, of course. I think everybody does that when they go to the States these days. I went to Ronnie James Dio's grave, been to the Ramones' grave at Hollywood Forever Cemeteries. So, you know, and I always say to people, you know, it might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I don't know if you've been to Hollywood Forever, man, but it's just like this beautiful park.
It's high on my to-do list, man. The closest I got was La Brea Park.
Yeah, it's unreal, mate. It's kind of, I mean, that's where they screen films there sometimes for the Ramones, Ramone bash or whatever they call it. But yeah, it's awesome. And you know, now they've got a thing on Instagram called the Ramones Ducks, and all these ducks flock around Dee Dee's grave all the time, you know. It's a really cool place, mate. It's really highly recommended that you go there if you can. I've been a few of those things, mate. Yeah, but no, I haven't been to Dimebag's grave yet. That's on the to-do list for whenever that may be.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I had a chance to go to Dime and Vinny's club, we pulled out and opted to just keep driving it through Texas, unfortunately. But I always say, next time, hopefully, fingers crossed, man. But look, with music, man. Look, you mentioned before you got to see Kiss in the 80s, like 1980, man. Like,
yeah, 1980, man. Yeah.
Amazing, man. Like, I mean, was that one of the first moments for you where you just went, I friggin' love music?
Yeah, I mean, I was always big on stuff, mate. I mean, my mum and dad were not as musically fanatical as what I am, but they, you know, little did they probably know that sometimes I'd get in, well, when they weren't home, I'd play something like a Neil Diamond album or something like that. And, but yeah, look, my mum always belted me into it with the Beatles. I mean, that was the thing, the Stones. It was just one of those things. But it was, when Kiss hit me, mate, it was just a whole different ball game. And, you know, I'll be forever grateful for the, you know, for them taking me down. But the funny thing was, I grew up out west in a town called Charleville. Right. It's 745 kilometres away from Brisbane. And they piled a car full of Charleville kids and off we went. Wow. So, you know, back in those days, I think it was $13.50 a ticket, you know.
Wow.
But it's hard to say, unless you're an old prick like me, that I just don't think anyone ever will match, probably except for the Beatles, will ever match the Kiss mania that was around. You know, you couldn't, I don't know if you were alive at that time, Jesse, or anything like that, yeah. But you couldn't touch anything without it being Kiss. They were in the New Idea. They were in the Women's Weeklies. They were on cereal packets. Really? They were, mate, it was just anywhere you looked, it was just fanatical. And, you know, the minute they did the Australian tour, they were dropped like a hot potato, you know, and you never saw, it was pretty much never to be seen again. But it was just lunacy, mate, the good lunacy, you know, for a guy like me, or a Kiss fan, you just could not get away from it. I've never seen anything like it, and I don't think we ever will see anything like it ever again. Nah. That's how nuts it was. And, you know, I got a couple of Kiss friends. You probably know Brett and Donna.
The Bartletts, man, the best people on the planet.
Mate, you know, the stuff that they got, I just, wow.
Yeah. I've had many an invite to their house to see the collection. I really want to partake that one day. Yeah,
it's something else, man. It's but you know, you see enough of their photos and that, and I mean, I lost a lot of my Kiss stuff too along the way with you know, in a flood and things like that, and that's something I'll never get back. And and now what some of it goes for with, you know, with people selling it, there's no way I could afford it either. So,
yeah, man. But, you know, like when you talk about lunacy, I mean, for me, closest I get to that lunacy was seeing the Kiss reunion tour, the first time they came back. I just remember losing my shit. Like, literally
I did too, mate.
Yeah. I've never jumped out of my seat so quick.
Well, I never thought I'd see, you know, I don't ever see, because Peter Chris, he left a few, you know, like probably, I don't know, in the couple of months leading up to it, maybe 6 months, 6 to 8 months leading up to the Australian tour, I think it was from memory. And, you know, Eric Carr got slotted in and, knocked the wind out of a kid's sails, thinking that you're going to see the Catman. But Eric Carr certainly made up for it. And, you know, I'm glad I got to see him because, I mean, I think, you know, you never get to see him again, unfortunately.
So you're a Catman guy all the way?
No, mate, I'm an ace man. I'm an ace man. Yeah, I'm an ace man. But, you know, like I said, I liked all of them as a kid. But I like all of them, mate. But, Ace is the one that stands out for me all the time.
And, again, you know, his solo album is just, you know, so superior. I don't know what the other three were thinking with their solo albums, but, man, Ace nailed it.
Yeah, and, you know, the older I get, mate, I think the Peter Solar album really grows in me too, and I can't knock that anymore as well. It's a totally different beast altogether. But, I find the older I get, the more I love it. So,
That's awesome.
Still not as good as Aces, but it gets there.
So, like, with the music side of things, I mean, you've found yourself coming face-to-face with a lot of, you know, your favourite artists and just some of the most iconic musicians to walk a stage, you know, what's that like for you? Do you get a sense of euphoria every time you meet, you know, one of these guys?
Not necessarily, mate. It's just as long as you know, they're just people like us and that. It's just,
they just have an interesting job.
You know, I just look at it as the way, you know, if they give me something so much that I love, you know, I mean, I would, and that's why I like to meet a lot of the guys and that, you know, that, I'm sure they know it from all the fans around the world and everything like that. But, you know, you act like a goose around them and, you know, you just treat them as normal people. And and I think that's what a lot of them love. And that's why a lot of them like coming to Australia because, you know, you look at things like when they go to South America and that, you know, and how fanatical those guys are, you know, the fans over there, you know?
Yeah, man. Did you have a moment, like, have you had one of those sort of moments where you sort of, because you're always pretty composed when you meet these people, but, like, did you have a moment where, you know, that composure was challenged and you felt a little bit starstruck?
I think I probably turned a little bit fanboy with Miles Kennedy once. So,
really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, it was just one of those things.
He's a great singer, dude.
But he, oh mate, he is, man. I mean, he's
I don't give a shit what anyone says, man. He is a great singer, and he makes it look too easy.
Yeah, he does, mate. And I think he's probably up there with the voices of, like, you know, people like Cornell, you know.
100%, man, 100%.
So I think if anyone's going to sing a Cornell or a Soundgarden song, I think you'd be looking no further than Miles Kennedy. But that's just my opinion.
No, that's fair. I'm also, you know, it's funny you mention that, because I often think either him or Richie Kotzen.
Yeah, never thought about that.
Yep.
Never thought about that.
Have a listen to Richie Kotzen, man.
I saw him live. I saw him live in Brisbane here, and it was abysmal, man. It was so bad. Don't know. There must have been something up with him that night, mate, because it wasn't just me who said that. He was. It looked like he didn't acknowledge the audience. He didn't acknowledge anything. He seemed to look at the floor the whole night. And yeah, really, real, real, real shame. Real shame.
I hate those concerts. I hate them with a passion, man. Like,
yeah.
Especially, yeah. You know, when your fans, you're paying top dollar to see, you know, to see the artists you love, and they give you a lackluster performance. And I know there's always reasons behind it. You know, there's always more to it. Like, this, sometimes it's bullshit with the promoter. Sometimes it's tour fatigue. Yeah. It's all kinds of things. But still, man.
Yeah, it's kind of like stage. Did you see Pantera in 2001?
That was the Reinventing the Steel tour.
That was, yeah. The one with...
that was the only one I got to see, but I'm so glad I got to see it.
Yeah, I mean, Phil was a bit of a mess that night, mate.
He was a tragic mess. So I saw him fall flat on his ass.
Yeah, he fell off the stage and took out a security guard because I was in the stalls that night up the top.
No way.
And, it was it's just a real shame. You could see the band were pretty pissed off at him too at that night. At that time.
They weren't happy at all.
And I did actually see him get carried out after that show.
Shit.
He just, just drank a little bit too much.
Yeah. I mean, as a fan, let me ask you too this, Jamie. Like, as a fan too, like, you've seen, you know, obviously your fair share of gigs at Festival Hall, which is such shit. Don't get me started on Festival Hall, but
makes me cry. Like, yeah, mate, like, look. A venue that probably has never been touched since bands like the Beatles played there, mate. You know, everything was original in there, you know. Why they, I don't know, man. It's, you know, money talks, development walks. I don't know.
It's every now and then I make a bit of a, I don't know why I do it to myself, but I make a bit of a painful walk into the foyer of the apartments just to look at the photos and the pieces of the wood and that. I guess I'm always longingly looking for some sort of rock and roll photo. And the only one I've managed to find is Alice Cooper and I think Cheap Trick and a Zeppelin photo. But no Pantera, no Slayer, definitely no White Zombie. And
No. Is there a Beatles one there?
There is a Beatles one.
There is a Beatles one there. Yes. Okay. I thought there wasn't at one point. But some of the gigs that I saw there, mate, was just.
Yeah,
you know, just an incredible place.
Yeah, it was one of a kind, man. Like, I'm grateful that I got to see it. Got to see a couple of gigs there, and Slayer and the God Hates Us All tour, and Pantera Reinventing the Steel. Like, they're two that stand out for me. But I remember wagging school to go see White Zombie.
That was a great night, that one. There wasn't many there, but that either, too. Probably only a couple of hundred, I remember, because they only had the floor open on that show.
I just remember having a great, great little spot right on the barrier, standing in front of Jay Younger and just watching him fall flat on his ass mid-solo and giving him the thumbs up, and he just smiles and gave us a thumbs up back, and I'm just, happy moment.
Yeah, no, there's some of the shows that they've had there, mate. I'll cherish those forever and a day,
absolutely. Absolutely. But, I mean, does that, as a fan, does it break your heart when you watch iconic venues like, you know, the Arena or, you know, the Roxy, I believe it was formerly.
Well, that's flat. Well, I only work a block away from there. So I saw it from, you know, I've been watching the, well, it's nothing now anyway, it's flat.
Yeah.
It's, but yeah, every single day when, you know, I'm driving to the office, you can see it, you know, this part's gone. Yeah, and you go the next day and it's flat, it's gone. So, but now it's, you know, they've got the you know, steam shovel things or whatever
want
to call it, excavators in there. Yeah, and it's getting ready for the apartments, unfortunately. But yeah, dude, I mean, it's a shame. We've lost some good venues in Brisbane over the, over the time. And
because like there's even I mean it's a little before my time, but there was there a venue called Metropolis or something?
Yeah, dude, that wasn't my center. So
it was.
Yeah, great venue, man. I saw a lot of bands there. Man.
Guns N' Roses played there, right?
No, they didn't. Not that I'm aware of, but not when my time. But
because I'm sure I heard somewhere Guns N' Roses toured on the Appetite for Destruction promo tour. I don't know how many dates they did, but they were one of the bands apparently that played. I don't know. Where I heard that.
But the only when they did the Appetite for Destruction tour in '88, they only did Sydney, Melbourne. So that was that was with the Angels and Kings of the Sun. So gotcha. Yeah, okay. So that was at the Sydney Entertainment Center. It was that one? But no. They cool. It was pretty. It was. I don't know what the first gig I ever saw there was. To be honest with you, man, I saw a lot of bands there. Like the last show I ever saw there was Carcass in '93. But the Meyer Center. What do you say? The general management of the place. They didn't like the clientele as such that frequented the. But that night at Carcass was pretty much the nail in the coffin. You had some idiots, you know, they stole the backdrop. And funnily enough, they gave it back to Carcass the last time they toured to Australia too.
Wow.
They left it at the back door of the hi-fi and said, sorry, I think you want this back. But anyway, yeah, and then they had all these lockers outside, you know, obviously, you know, not only for people attending the venue, but anyone who's, you know, a bus passenger or anything could lock their shit in there.
Yep.
And there, you know, you had a few idiots that had damaged them, broken the doors off and bent the doors, things like that. So that was pretty much the end of Metropolis. But, you know, there's a lot of bands played there. Bolt Thrower played there, Morbid Angel.
Did Danzig play there?
No, he never did the '93 tour up here. He only did, I think that was Sydney, Melbourne as well. Yeah, that was the Thrall of Demon Sweat live tour.
It's one of them tours I wish I'd seen, dude.
Yeah, I got a feeling he did Selena's in Sydney. I didn't go down to it, man. That was sort of, I did travel for some stuff in the early 90s, like Sepultura and things like that. But there were some things, obviously, plane fares were a little bit dearer at those times. Sure. And so some of it I didn't actually go to. But there's a lot of stuff there. Roland's band. Played there a bunch of times, but they always had a lot of things on Friday, and they call Rock Against Work, which is things like Blowhard, Fat Bud, Powderfinger, when they were starting out, all those sort of things. So it started at around 12 midday.
If I can interject for 1 second, when you said Powderfinger, I straight away, like, I have been dying to ask someone, and I've got a feeling you might be one of those people.
I know what you're going to ask me, mate.
Were you there at the infamous Powderfinger supporting Pantera gig?
In 1994, yes, I was.
Because I have dreams to speak to a member of Powderfinger about this very gig, because the only account that I've got is what I've skim read in their book. I would love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, well, look, I was never a big Powderfinger fan, mate, and good luck to them. They were a very popular band, and they did the Hard Yard, so I'll give them that, mate. I mean, I like to see a band that I remember seeing Powderfinger one night at the Orion Hotel, and they were opening for a covers band.
Holy shit.
That's a long time ago, dude. That was like, it's either, would have been 89, 90, I think it was. So
is this pre-Parables for Wooden Ears?
Yeah, it would have been around that. Around that time. But I do remember that they were open for a covers band. I think there wasn't many people there. I'll put the thumbs up for Powderfinger. Did the Hard Yards to get where they were, but are they my type of band? No, they're not. So they're a band I probably don't really want to ever hear of again.
It's one of the greatest mismatches I've ever heard of. Yeah, man. I read in the book the promoter thought it was a good idea for exposure. He thought, oh, you guys will play in a bigger venue to a bigger crowd, failing to tell them it was a bunch of bloodthirsty metalheads.
Yeah, well, they had Silverchair support them in Newcastle. So it's, again,
what
you know,
the
it's...
What fuck are these people smoking, dude?
Yeah, and even in '94 at Festival, when Whitesnake played there, they had the Radiator support, which I found was a strange one as well. So, it was... I don't know what was going on at the time, but that's what it was.
As a fan, does that leave you baffled with a sense of why? Like, what?
Yeah, well, it does, man. I mean, and it kind of the other one, I mean, going moving forward, probably about 10 years after that was, which really baffled me is, because you probably would have been in, would have, may have been around the devolution sort of era, was it? No, yeah, about 2006.
Yeah.
Well, when, remember when the Static X and El Nino tour hit the arena?
I do remember that. Yes.
And they threw on, Wish for Wings as a support.
I kind of
thought that was a kick in the ass for bands that would have fit that bill, probably more like your guys, you know, being that industrial influence against the Static X, rather than some fashionistas who, you know, look more for their beautiful tattoos and their hairstyles and who basically did sort of come out and say, fuck the metal crowd, you know, this, we got the support. And that's what they basically said, you know, but, good luck to them. I mean, they got some good gigs along the way and, not my type of band. And
we've seen some weird mismatch since then, like, In Heart's Wake with Slipknot. That was a weird one to wrap my head around.
Yeah, it's just I just find it. Yeah, things like that. I mean, good luck to them if they do. But it's absolutely. There's a lot of better supports and a lot of local talent. I think that probably would be better suited to a bill rather than Powderfinger.
I just think I don't know. Like, for anyone that's a music fan, I just think when you're looking back on history, I just think of that as just one of those what the moments. You know, that's. Yeah, there's been some weird support since, but Powderfinger supporting Pantera at the height of their cowboy whiskey sculling prime, man. Like,
it was a strange thing, man. They did two gigs that time. I only went to one the first night, but they said two nights at from memory in '94. But look, having said that, if it wasn't for Powderfinger, we probably would never have got the Triffid or the Fortitude Music Hall. So, you know.
Well, that's it, man. I mean, you know, I'm not by any means slagging Powderfinger at all. I'm just, you know.
No, not at all. I mean, like I said, they're not my band. I'm happy they got where they did.
Yeah, I mean, doing crew work, I've seen a really cool plaque put up in at the back of the River Stage for them. At the back of the stage, it's super cool. But it's real. I'll send you photos, man. It's super cool. But but like for that time, man, these guys walking on stage, knowing that this crowd will just chew them up and spit them out. I'm just like, I can only imagine just the terror that they must have been feeling.
Oh. Yeah, it would have been hard for you. I mean, you know, you would think if you're in that band, should I do this? You know, it's right. I mean, I always remember the story that a mate of mine told me. You probably know him. He's Clifford Hode from Kings of the Sun.
One of the greatest drummers to this day I've ever watched.
Yeah. When he told me when they, it must have been '88. I think it must have been the Crazy Nights tour of Kiss, and they played in Italy, and they were getting. Sharpened coins thrown at them. Like,
what?
So, yeah, like they'd sharpen these, the crowd has sharpened these edges because it's just one of those things. Like, I mean, a good friend of mine in the UK told me all those years ago when you play Europe and that there is a few bands you want to be good to back up because the crowd are going to hate you. And those bands like Black Sabbath, AC/DC, Aussie, and you know, probably Iron Maiden. But yeah, I guess, you know, it's a fanatical world out there, man, and people just want to see the band that they're there for, you know.
That's right, man.
But yeah, he had to walk off stage, I think protecting himself with a symbol or something like that, he told me. If you ever run into him, ask him about it. It's quite amusing. I think his brother Jeff went back on stage and told them to all get fucked. So, yeah.
Oh, that's crazy, man. So, I won't hold you up for too much longer, mate.
No, I'm all good, man. I got nothing else to do.
No, it's all good. But I appreciate it. But I mean, as a fan, as a music loving fan as well, the ongoing great debate, streaming versus vinyl versus CD. I mean, where's your heart in all this?
Look, mine's always physical media, mate. And I'm probably I'm in the minority when I say I'm still a CD guy. Look, you know, you can't rip vinyl to a, you know, I'm not even on a streaming thing, man, except for, you know, your Netflix and that. So sure. I still use my old click wheel and the old iPod, you know, in the car and whatnot. Awesome. So when I buy something, I rip it onto the iPod and off I go. But vinyl to me is, it's good. It's good. I do own a lot of vinyl records, don't get me wrong. But, you know, it's all, you're always going to get that, you know, that chance that it's going to go snap, crackle, pop and jump and things like that. But it's great looking at a bigger cover. It's great looking at the lyric sheet. That's really good. And it's probably great looking at a colored, you know, piece of wax as well. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I guess I'm the CD guy, man. Because, you know, when a band like you, I suppose when you look at a label like Nuclear Blast, you know, you're going to get yourself a bonus tracks. You're going to get yourself a live DVD with it. And I think you get more bang for your buck than, you know, what a vinyl record is, paying $60 or $70 just to, you know, get 10 songs rather than 12.
That's right, man, because I've had this discussion so many times and I'm always intrigued to get everyone's perspective, because I always talk about just going on the journey, listening to an album. You don't get that with streaming. Like streaming, you've got the options of hit skip. And I know you can do that with CD as well, but you don't. You find yourself drawn to the opening track, to the end track, and you're looking at the liner notes. You're looking at the artwork. Some people are even smelling the paper, you know.
Totally.
It's a fanatical thing, man. We're fans. That's what we do, right?
And I mean, it's, you know, I think the CD's kind of on its way out, but a lot of people will say otherwise. You know, some of the CD pages I do follow on Facebook, but look, it's hard to say, dude. But, you know, I it could be a different thing. If I lived in the States or I lived in Europe or whatever like that, I mean, the cost of vinyl over there is a shit ton cheaper than what we get over here. And then, obviously, you know, the retailers here have got to whack the postage on top of it as well,
which
explains why it's, you know, this phenomenal amount. But, I still like the CD, dude. I mean, it's compact and it's, you know, if I had that much vinyl, I wouldn't have any room, man, you know.
Yeah, 100%, man. With gigs coming back as well, you know, after obviously the madness that we've had, that's what I call it. Do you feel optimistic about the future? Do you feel like we're this year we're good to go, or do you think, oh yeah, let's give it another year?
Dude, I think we're good to go. I everything I've gone to see so far has happened. You know, look, I mean, having said that, I think I've only seen the only international bands I've seen since they've dropped the restrictions is the Under the Southern Stars thing that was down the Gold Coast with Cheap Trick and Bush and Stone Temple Pilots, which I thought was, you know, phenomenal show. But, and, you know, other than that, I've just been to see Australian music. So, but look, when I'm walking into Kiss in September, then all will be good. I mean, what's this going to be? The third time it'll cancel if it's going to cancel? Fourth time?
Yeah.
But look, you know, we had the Bronx here last week. So, there's international things happening.
Next week?
Yeah, which it's going to be interesting, mate, because that's the same night as the first State of Origin. So.
Oh, really?
So I think the chances, you know, you'll have fans and you won't have fans, but I think that's a pretty bad move on the promoters thing that would have been different in Melbourne. When you're talking in Queensland and New South Wales and the same night as Origin, there might be a few dints. He might take a few hits there, unfortunately.
I think so too, man. Like, you know, everyone loves Karabi, but that's a...
Yeah, I remember they did that years ago with... when Sodom played here, when they played the old club, Royal Rosies. Remember the old Rosies Club Phoenix? And they actually postponed it until they didn't get on stage until after 11, after the Origin finished. They worked it out and thought, well, shit, we better put it off in case people do come down after Origin. And, it did take a hit, man, you know. And the same night in Sydney was Celtic Frost. And I think similar sort of thing happened there. So... yeah, Queensland, New South Wales, State of Origin, mate. Someone's going to miss out.
Yeah, don't mix the music with the footy, man. So, or unless the promoter is, a step ahead of the curve and goes, and has a good word to the NRL and says, "Hey, I'll get my guy on the stage halftime." You know.
Yeah.
One could wish, because God help us with some of the entertainment they put on at the footy.
Yeah, are you going to see Karabi next week?
I am away and I arrive back a little too late to go Scrubby, and I'm devastated.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be going, mate. I as much as I'd like to. Look, I'll give it some thought closer to the time. It's just there's a lot of things that's just been announced that are coming up later this year. That's probably gonna, get more of my attention.
Yeah, I saw the Crowbar show. Rest in peace, Crowbar. But I saw the gig there, and that blew the roof off for me. I loved it.
Yeah, I've only ever seen him with the Dead Daisies, unfortunately. So.
He played that self-titled Crew album from start to finish.
Yeah, I only listened to it a couple of days ago. It's an awesome album.
Talk about musical perfection.
Something else, mate. But no, mate, there's a lot. I think we're good to go, man. I think, with a lot of these announcements coming through and everything, I think people are over all the bullshit with this COVID and all the double standards that were happening along the way. As you could go and watch a football game with 50,000 people, but you couldn't go and see a band with 1,000 people, And it wasn't just here. It was, and people need to realise that, and they're blaming our government, but it was right across the world. So, it's just one of those things, and one country does it, everyone follows,
That's it.
But, I think I'm hoping the madness is right behind us now.
So do I, man. So do I.
Yeah.
On that note, man, Jamie, man, thank you so much for sharing. I feel like we've only scraped the surface of some of your happy memories, dude.
Happy to come on anytime, man. It's awesome. Good talking to you, mate. I said, I can talk for hours on movies and music, and it's a subject or two subjects of in my life that never get dull. So
I'll ask a quick fire question. Essential movie that you feel is criminally underrated that people need to see.
Oh, I've got to go to the Warriors again, wouldn't I?
That's good.
I've got to say that. Look, what else can I say? Clockwork Orange. Yes. Taxi Driver.
Yep.
Probably my second favourite film, if I'm in the right time, it's probably a toss-up between 1 and 2. Mad Max 2 is probably my second favourite. But depending what mood I'm in, Mad Max 1 might take it over as well. But look,
I like how you answer that mood.
it's one of those things. We're like sort of Jaws and Jaws 2, what do I want to watch, Taxi Driver, I think it's a shame because I look at a lot of these younger people, man, even as far back as some of the 90s films, and you talk to them, at work or wherever, and they've never heard of it. And you think, well, it's only 20 years ago. Like, we're not talking back to, Gone with the Wind sort of shit. Clockwork Orange and Taxi Driver are big ones for me too. So, they're probably underrated cult films, but more people should see them. So,
and what about music?
Any genre. Who should people listen to?
Yeah, your personal picks of. I know it's weird and unusual. Bold question to ask, but a criminally underrated band that you think more people should listen to that you don't think enough people do.
Look, that's a hard one, mate. I'd probably have to go. You got me on that one, mate. Possibly, and I'll probably get a lot of shit for this, but
even a top three.
Look, I'm a big fan of Ghost, mate.
Cool.
A lot of people lay shit on them, but I know they're getting bigger. I know they play a lot of arenas now, but I think people, when I first heard them, I kind of went, what the hell is this? But I persisted with it, and I think they're incredible. Other bands that I rate are, Ramones, Misfits. Yeah. People should be listening to Ramones and Misfits.
Yep.
More people should be listening to Kiss.
I agree.
But yeah, man, it's just that's probably a hard one.
That's a good answer.
Rose Tattoo. There you go. There's one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I never forget about my Rose Tattoo lads. they're probably one of my favourite Australian bands.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They're great.
So, yeah.
No, that's amazing, man. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to hang out and talk, man. It's great to just hear the passionate words of a passionate fan.
No, I appreciate it, mate. It's always good, and happy to come on anytime if you want to pick another movie and talk shit or
I like that.
Talk whatever you want to talk about, and in general, yeah, mate, happy to come on. Be awesome.
I just might take you up on that.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks, Jamie.
All good.
Have a great one, man, and thanks
again. Yeah, thanks, Jesse. Cheers. See you, mate. Bye.
And that was our awesome chat with Jamie Cook here on Happy Days. Thank you so much, Jamie, for taking the time to talk. And I dare say we'll have a follow-up conversation for sure, because Jamie's got some incredible stories to tell, and I'm really keen to talk about some of the venues and concerts that he's seen, because he's seen quite a few of them, and I feel like we barely scratched the surface. But it was nice to just get into just a really cool, passionate conversation between fans about movies that we love and the music we love. And it's just a feel-good episode for me, you know? And I hope it was for you guys and gals too, man. Honestly, there's nothing more than just a really cool chat between friends about what we love. And sometimes that's really all you need to just give you a little pep in your step for the day or the night. It's amazing the power of a good conversation and, you know, reliving good memories and happiness. It's a beautiful thing. So thanks again to Jamie for taking the time to share his happy days with me. And that was certainly some happy days, that's for sure. Thanks to all of you awesome people that take the time to listen to this show. If you enjoyed this episode and others like it and want to continue listening to it, please support this show by hitting the subscribe button on whatever platform you are currently listening to this show on. If you could go one step further and hit the ratings button, I don't care what that rating is, preferably a 5 would be nice, but also leave a review. Doesn't have to be an epic essay, it can just be 2 words, this sucks or great show, you know, it helps. It just shows people that you care, and I have this weird feeling that it might help others find the show a lot easier as well. Again, this show and others like it proudly brought to you by my very own Freak Productions. It is my proud creative hub where I create comic books, novels, these podcasts that you are listening to, and many, many more creative things of passion. I have the greatest time doing all this. I really love doing it. Some days stresses me out because there's not enough hours in the day. And sometimes I have to remind myself I have to sleep. But I love it. And again, you know, it's the basis of the show. It's passion. It's being a passionate fan doing this. So please go to www.freekproductions.com and support the cause. Show me some love, because I appreciate it and it goes a long way, and I've got so many more things on the horizon that I'm working on. So I appreciate the support. Thanks again for tuning into this episode. I look forward to having you here next week for another awesome episode. It should be a good one, and it always is. It's always fun talking to different people from different walks of life, and I really enjoyed this episode with Jamie. It was a good one. So thanks for your time, folks, and have yourselves a happy week. Keep positive, keep your chin up, and stay happy. Thank you.